online at bbc.co.uk/5live. This is the UK's home of live news and live sport.
5 Live.
It is established wisdom, of course, that whenever Mark goes away, he leaves James with a very poor week. That's the way it's traditionally worked out. A rough kind of assessment, James. Is it a good week, bad week, indifferent week?
I would say indifferent. Actually, we've had worse than this. So Mark, of course, as we know, will be listening.
He is, and will text in his opinion, which I'll ignore.
Yeah. So thanks for Mark for giving me an OK week this week instead of an utter turkey.
So coming up, reviews of, amongst others, Battle in Heaven, Saw 2. I could never bring myself to see Saw 1, but if you want more of that, and hear what James thinks in just a moment. The Legend of Zorro and Thumbsucker, amongst the movies coming up. Your correspondence, welcome. mayo@bbc.co.uk, 85058. And all the reviews available again on the website. You can download them and carry them around with your MP3 player of choice. The UK box office top 10 this week, number 10 is Domino.
Which isn't very good, but Keira Knightley is desperate to prove that she's not just the posh girl from Teddington. And I do admire the fact, and she will say, look, I just want to show people that there is more to me than what they think I am. And in Domino, she's trying to do that by playing this bounty hunter. She comes in and says, hello, I'm Domino, I'm a bounty hunter. And you go, no, you're not. But at least she's trying, and I do like her. And yeah, okay, it's because I fancy her as well. But, you know, she is trying hard.
Is it the same problem?
It's a turkey, though.
Oh, right, okay. So she's not bad, but it's a turkey. Is it the same problem Meg Ryan had when she was trying to persuade people that she was a helicopter pilot?
Yeah, very similar. She's not. She's Meg Ryan. Exactly. She should be in pinafore dresses and in romantic comedies.
And be Dipsy.
Exactly.
Which is what we want her to be.
Yeah.
Kinky Boots at 9.
Which is okay. Chiwetel Ejiofor is the guy who plays the main...
Chewie.
Chewie, that's him. Yeah, the drag queen in this movie. And he is fantastic. He's been in loads of films. Several this year. I mean, Serenity was out a few weeks ago. He was in that. Four Brothers out about a month ago. He was in that. He is a great, great actor and absolutely steals the show in what I think is an average movie, but he is very, very good in it.
Pride and Prejudice, this week's number 8.
Well, you see, this is what she does best. This is Keira as we know and love her. And I think, again, you know, a lot of people have issues with her, and I think this is her best performance so far. I really like Pride and Prejudice.
Why do they have issues?
I don't know. I'm sure people are going to be listening and disagreeing, of course, but a lot of women I seem to speak to really don't like her. They just say, oh, she just pouts all the time. And she hasn't proven herself. And I can see that she's got room for improvement. And I think she's doing that.
Are they jealous?
Very possibly. Very possibly.
Pride and Prejudice. They've broken the plan with number 7.
Which is a new entry, which I think is great. This is Bill Murray teaming up with Jim Jarmusch. The more Bill Murray movies you watch, the more you realise he actually does very little. In this movie, he's virtually doing nothing. But if anybody can get away with doing nothing, it's Bill Murray. This is about a middle-aged guy, who, you know, he's a real Lothario, he doesn't have a family, he's actually quite lonely. But he gets a letter, a mysterious letter, saying, you've got a son. Doesn't say who it's from, but it says, this happened like 20 years ago, you've got a son. And he has to try and work out who sent the letter, goes on this road trip to visit his ex-girlfriends to find out if he does actually have a son. Actually, the movie becomes much more about him finding himself rather than him finding his son. But you know he's deadpan, we know that that's his thing. But in this, he does so little. But because he has that deadpan face, you can look at him and just read so much into it. And I think that's his genius.
And I know he does that very well.
Yeah.
And he is the best at doing that.
Yeah.
But will there come a time, and because Mark was saying exactly the same thing last week, he thinks it's fantastic, and think he's fantastic in it. Will there not come a time thinking, we've seen you do this, Bill, and it's time to, you know, be more Ghostbusters or be more Groundhog Day, just do something that surprises us?
Well, I think, of course, when he was doing Ghostbusters and Groundhog Day, we got bored with that, and he disappeared for a while, and then came back and did the sort of arts house movies, which is the phase he's at now. We'll get bored with that, and I'm sure he'll disappear again, and then come back with something new.
Number 6, Lord of War.
Which is Nicolas Cage. This is this sort of a cheeky, tongue-in-cheek look at the arms trade, which is something on paper doesn't seem to work, and certainly looking at the box office doesn't seem to work either. But actually, I think it's really well done, and I think if you get some weird black comedy laughs out of something really, really serious, it can get the message across much better than if you're sat there preaching at someone. And Nicolas Cage, I think, is good in this. But Nicolas Cage is best when he's a bit crazy, when he's got a screw loose, and that is what he's got in this.
And what is the message of the film? That the arms trade, it's not very good?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that's something we sort of know already. But it's interesting to see the characters behind it fleshed out into real humans.
Number five, Into the Blue.
Yeah. I mean, it's a film about Jessica Alba's bottom. I think even Jessica Alba would probably admit to that. It's just it's a deep-sea diving movie. This couple discover a treasure at the bottom of their Bahamas and the sea around the Bahamas, and they have to try and stop the bad people getting hold of it. And there's nothing to it at all. It's just pretty people in either bikinis or swimming costumes. That's it. I mean, that's not a bad thing, but if you're looking for any kind of story or plot, nothing. But
it's at number five.
Well, obviously, a lot of people want to go and see Jessica Alba's bottom, you know, but that's all they're going to get.
Would that be a better title, do you think?
It's to the point. That's what the film's about. They might as well call it that.
Sky High at four.
Oh, which is good fun. This is it's a superhero high school. Good fun. Kurt Russell plays the dad in it. He's not in it enough for my liking, because I think Kurt Russell's fantastic. But he plays the dad of this. He's his superhero himself. And his teenage boy goes to a new high school for superheroes. But actually, the teenage boy hasn't got any superhero powers himself. And really, it ends up like any teen movie, which is the geeks versus the cool people. But because it has this Incredibles-style twist to it, I think it's quite well done.
And so live-action Incredibles?
Not as good as The Incredibles. And some of the gags you feel you have seen before in The Incredibles. The stretchy superhero, you know, getting everywhere with his stretchy limbs. You think, well, we've kind of seen that joke already. But it's still cute.
Tim Burton's Corpse Bride at three.
Very, very good indeed. Dark, actually quite scary. Of course, because it's Tim Burton, we have to use the buzzword of gothic. Helena Bonham Carter's in it, of course. Christopher Lee's in it, of course. All the stuff you expect from Tim Burton is there, but he can do it fantastically. And the music by Danny Elfman, who does all of Tim Burton's movies, I think is particularly good this time around.
What is it that makes a film gothic? I mean, if you take Tim Burton out of it, what is a gothic film?
I think you need a historical. You need lots of pale-looking people. Christina Ricci, for example, although she's not in this one, with long black hair. And it needs to have ghosts, and it needs to have skeletons, and it needs to be essentially about death.
Ghosts, skeletons, death,
yeah.
Christina Ricci,
yeah.
Dark hair.
Ideally Christina Ricci, but Helena Bonham Carter is sort of taken over the mantle now of gothic queen.
And that defines gothic for you?
Obviously literary scholars who have spent, you know, their PhD studying gothic literature and things like that will now text in saying, actually, you need this, this and this. And I hope they do, because we love it when people do that.
Gothic architecture.
Yeah. But
gothic
I'm talking about Tim Burton movies.
Okay. Corpse Bride, number three. Nanny McPhee, number two.
Absolutely huge, this movie. Done really, really well. New entry at number two. Taken a lot of money. And it's cute. It's really fun. I mean, it's not, like, breaking particularly new ground, but I think if you like Lemony Snicket, if you like Harry Potter, that old-fashioned fairy tale family film, then you'll like this. Obviously, a huge sprinkling of Mary Poppins in there as well.
On the... you mentioned Harry Potter. Have you seen it?
I have, yeah. I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Oh, you're not?
No, we've all signed our lives away, and we'll get sent to Azkaban if we do talk about it. So.
But a 12A?
It is a 12A.
Are you allowed to say whether you think that's the right call?
I'm a rebel, Simon. I'll tell you anyway, whether I'm not allowed to. I think it is. It is dark. It is scary.
And gothic?
A little bit gothic, in parts, yeah. You've got Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort, who... I mean, I find Ralph Fiennes scary anyway, when he's trying to be nice. In Made in Manhattan, he's scary. So as Voldemort, I thought he was particularly scary. I think it deserves the 12A certificate. I don't think kids are going to go home having nightmares, but it is certainly darker than the previous movies.
OK, Nanny McPhee, number two. Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, this week's number one.
Which I just love. I think it's fantastic, and I think the reason why it's going to be number one for a while and going to make loads of money is because the more you see it, the more you enjoy it. Because as we know, with Nick Park, with Aardman Animations, when they do this kind of thing, they absolutely cram stuff into every scene. So you can watch it once and get the gags. You can watch it again and get a completely new set of gags, because there is so much in there to look at and to listen to.
It is quite extraordinary how you can win kids over, win cynical movie critics over.
Yeah.
And I came out of a screening with Boyd Hilton, who comes in for our books panel, but he's a TV critic for Heat.
Yeah.
You know, and he thought it was great. I mean, that's an art.
Absolutely. And the weird thing about it is, Nick Park will happily admit that he makes very old-fashioned films. It's like Nick Park grew up or in, like, 1950s and then stopped. That's his frame of reference. Those are the jokes, those are the things he's interested in. Old-fashioned, black-and-white British movies, Ealing comedies, Hitchcock, that kind of thing. And you see all that in all of his movies. He's not really someone of 2005, but we still love it, even though they have this nice old-fashioned feel to them.
And to be able to get that sort of movie to number one, not just in the UK, but at the US... Yeah. And with Mr. Katzenberg saying, here, have lots of my money.
Yeah.
That's a great achievement.
Made like $45 million so far in America, only been out 3 weeks. And I just love the idea of people in, let's say, Kentucky watching this, where you've got the guy who used to play Mr. Rumbold out of Are You Being Served doing the voice of the vicar, and they're sitting there watching it, and what must they be thinking? You've got Peter Kay doing all these jokes. What are they thinking? But it's not, it was number one in America, so they must have loved it.
And looking at the releases of this week, I don't think there's anything amongst the releases that will knock Wallace and Gromit off the top, but we'll come to those in just a moment. We also have a competition this week, which is sort of a clear-out competition. We've got a whole load of DVDs to give away. What do you know what's in the
prize? Well, there's so much. I think it's probably best if, after the news, I'll just basically empty this bag, which has just got T-shirts, DVDs, caps, everything in, and we'll just go through what's in there.
So it's a chuck-out of everything that we don't
essentially,
want.
Essentially, yeah. Essentially, someone needs some space in their cupboard.
It's a jumble sale.
Yeah.
OK, and so you're going to have to enter this without actually knowing precisely what the contents is. Do you have a question ready to go?
I have a question, yeah, but I will tease and tell you what's in there, but there's quite a lot of stuff, so I don't know if I've got time now.
No, OK, well, give us the question, and then what people will do is they will enter on the phones, 0500 999693, as an act of faith, knowing that you're not going to sell them any rubbish.
OK, well, one of the DVDs in there is Talk Radio, which is an Oliver Stone movie, really, really good movie, and I want to know, this is an Oliver Stone question. John Travolta was originally slated to play which character in an Oliver Stone biopic? Basically, John Travolta was originally slated to star in an Oliver Stone biopic. What was that movie? What was the character?
0500 999693 and a bag of indefinable stuff.
I will tell you what they are
in a few moments' time. Five Live Movie Conversation here with James King, and we were talking about gothic movies because of... Tim Burton. David Smith says, your excellent film critic said that Elfman did the music for all of Burton's movies. He did not, of course, Ed Wood being the exception. Also his best movie, in my humble opinion, says Dave Smith.
Oh, we're in Pedant's Corner now.
We've redefined Pedant's Corner.
Yeah.
This is where it started.
Right, OK.
So...
I apologise for that.
No, that's fine. Stu in Cumbria... about Corpse Bride, like so many of Tim Burton's films, the songs spoil Corpse Bride. Too fussy, too many words.
Oh, controversial.
So you can't hear any of them. Very distracting, cool film otherwise, though.
Controversial. You see, I really like the music, the songs in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as well, again by Danny Elfman. I thought they were brilliant, but again, a lot of people hated them.
Frey Muller in London. Gothic, of or relating to a style of fiction that emphasises the grotesque, mysterious... and desolate.
She's just got out of a dictionary, though, hasn't she?
Yes. Well, Wikipedia would add in, at this point, terror, mystery... doom, death, decay, haunted buildings, ghosts, madness and hereditary curses.
Christina Ricci?
It's a laugh a minute. No, lank, no. Greasy hair not in there either.
OK.
Right, so that's enough goth, unless you know otherwise. mail@bbc.co.uk. I suppose we ought to do a new release, James.
I've still got that bag of prizes.
Oh, yeah,
well,
what's in it? What's in it?
OK, right. This is going to take time, isn't it? Right, so Talk Radio was the one we mentioned, and that's the question, because it's an Oliver Stone movie, and the question to win all this stuff that I'm about to reveal is, which... Oliver Stone movie was originally going to star John Travolta in the lead role. It's a biopic. John Travolta would have been so wrong for this character, but it was originally going to be him. Which Oliver Stone movie am I talking about? So Talk Radio is one of the things. We've got Land of the Dead T-shirt. This really is just clearing out a cupboard. The Island. That was a great film, but you can win an Island cap. There's something. This is a belt. That's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy belt. Some more DVDs. We've got What the Bleep Do We Know, which is a documentary. We've got The Company of Wolves. We've got the punk documentary by Don Letts called Punk Attitude.
Okay, that's enough. People know what that means. It's a bag.
There's loads more T-shirts as well. And it's all come in this nice Herbie fully loaded plastic bag, which surely is the plum.
0500 999693 if you know the answer to the question. Let's do something new, James.
Zorro. This is the legend of Zorro. 7 years since the first Zorro movie with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. Both of them are back this time around. I think the first one really worked because there were some jokes in it. I thought it was much funnier than everyone expected it to be. Quite tongue-in-cheek, actually. The big deal with this new one, The Legend of Zorro, is that the couple, Zorro and Elena, Antonio and CZJ, now have a son, OK? And Zorro's been neglecting his son because he's always out working, he won't retire, Elena wants him to retire, he won't. So eventually she gets so annoyed that she ups and leaves. So basically this is Zorro with marital issues.
What happened to the man I married?
What happened to the woman who used to fight by my side?
She had a son.
So, he'll grow up to be a nice little aristocrat who has no idea where he came from and doesn't care about anyone but himself.
If you walk out that door, you are not sleeping here tonight.
Maybe I'll just take my suitcase.
I hope you and Tanaro were very happy together.
We will be.
blimey. You can go off it on a clip, can't you?
Great voice, though, Antonio Banderas. Particularly good in Shrek 2, of course, when he's playing Puss in Boots. I think his voice is fantastic. As well as the personal stuff, the relationship stuff, there's also, obviously, an action plot, and essentially Zorro has to save California from an evil Frenchman played by Rufus Sewell, who is a British actor, but can specialise in doing hammy bad guys in Hollywood's big-budget movies. Feels very forced, this film. I think the split up between Zorro and Elena is very tenuous. Really quite a weak idea just to get the sequel, the ball rolling in terms of the plot. And the whole plot feels very tenuous, like something they've conjured up essentially to make more money. Not because you came out of that first one 7 years ago and thought, you know what, I really want to know what happens to everyone next. Because, you know, it's fine, but I don't think anybody ever thought that. 7 years later, they've dragged them back again, and it does feel much more forced. Catherine Zeta-Jones, not in it that much, actually, because they are separated in this movie. They're not on screen very much together. When they are on screen, pretty good, some pretty good chemistry. But when they're separated, you just think, it's much better when they're together. Worst of all, though, it's such a long film. It's like 2 hours 10, at least. You don't need that, not in this kind of movie. That's an epic. This is not an epic. This is silly. It needs to be 100 minutes at most.
In the original, wasn't he taking over from Anthony Hopkins?
He was taking over from Anthony Hopkins, and that was quite a nice touch as well. Obviously, that's not happening in this movie. It does feel endless. One good thing, I think Antonio Banderas is really good at this character. He clearly loves it. Catherine Zeta-Jones doesn't seem that bothered. Of course, since the first Zorro movie, her career has gone massive, and she's won the Oscar. With that first Zorro movie, that was the one that broke her, really, in Hollywood. And that was the one that gave her the big step up. And so she's gone completely different direction, whereas Antonio Banderas, I think, still needs a movie like this. This is his biggest thing that he does. Now he's got Shrek as well, but this is his big role. And he seems to really love it and loves the action and loves the character and is actually pretty funny at comedy, although we don't see him do that much in the English language. But as big as the budget is, as slick as it looks, it does just feel really pointless. You just think, I just don't really care about, you know.
And who'd have thought after the last Zorro movie, if you had to put your house on, which one of these stars is about to go ballistic?
Yeah.
You would say Mr. Banderas as opposed to
Mr.
Jones.
And it was originally going to be, because the director's a guy called Martin Campbell, who made Goldeneye before he made the first Zorro movie. And Isabella Scorupco, who was in Goldeneye, was originally going to be Elena, the female lead. And then at the last minute, they changed it. I think Steven Spielberg, who's involved in producing it, had seen Catherine Zeta-Jones in a TV miniseries that she'd done in America. So they gave it to Catherine Zeta-Jones. But there's this weird thing where Catherine Zeta-Jones and Isabella Scorupco, who, let's be honest, most of us have forgotten about, could have been swapped.
I never knew anything about her in the first place. Well, I couldn't have forgotten about
her.
She
was in Goldeneye. They could have had swapped careers. It could have all been about Isabella, but now it's all about Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Who was she again?
Isabella Scorupco. She's in Goldeneye. She's one of the hot Bond girls.
I'll try not to forget her in future. Simon in Truro says, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, in my opinion, stank. But Corpse Bride is simply a divine aroma. Stick to what you know best, Mr. Burton. Tony in Acton. Thank you, Simon. When women slag off successful women like Keira Knightley, even Jordan, it's always jealousy.
is that a generalisation? I don't know.
Probably. And this from Richard Wright, who says, don't you think that History of Violence was overrated by our friend Kermit, who's not here this week? Well acted, well directed, but essentially not much to say, or am I wrong? What does this week's chap think? What do you think, this week's chat?
I really liked History of Violence, actually. I thought it was fantastic. And a great performance by Viggo Mortensen. And going places where a lot of movies never went before. Is that Richard Wright, the former Ipswich? And was he Tottenham goalkeeper as well? Or was it Arsenal? I can't remember.
No, he's in Bristol. And he's a product trainer.
Oh, OK. Probably not.
And are you surprised to find that History of Violence is actually not in the top 10 anymore?
I think it slipped out, actually. I mean, it's a great movie. I disagree with Richard Wright. Hello, Richard. I do think it's a fantastic movie, but it's not a big bums-on-seats audience pleaser. It's a dark movie and it's hard going. It's David Cronenberg. That's what all his movies are, even though this is his most mainstream movie.
Phil Barrett in Buckingham. James King talking about people having issues with Keira Knightley. Does he or anyone else think people care that much about actors? They make films which are enjoyable or not, but the idea of actors having fans or having issues with them is laughable, to me at least. I think they do. I mean, I think people do feel passionately. It might be the you're just particularly well-adjusted, Phil.
That's why people go to see movies with big stars in, because they like that person. That's the whole attraction, isn't it?
Dan says, has James seen Ghost in the Shell 2? which comes out this week. I've been waiting since 1995 for this sequel. Would hate to find out it's not very good. I mean, that would be very disappointing to wait a decade.
Well, I mean, I can't enlighten you because I haven't seen it, which is why we're not talking about it this week. Apart from the fact that the people I do know who have seen it all came out of the cinema going, what the blooming hell was that all about? Really had absolutely no idea what it was about. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I can't say, because I haven't seen it.
Dan, go see it this week and let us know via email next week when we will doubtless review it. The question on the competition, James, or this week's bloke...
Yeah, this is because one of the prizes we're giving away is Talk Radio on DVD, the Oliver Stone movie. Which Oliver Stone biopic was originally going to star John Travolta in the lead role? And my only clue is I just cannot imagine him playing this role whatsoever, but it was originally going to be him. It ended up someone else, thankfully.
Ian in Belfast says, was it JFK in JFK?
Incorrect.
Mark from the Wirral says, is it Gordon Gekko in Wall Street?
Incorrect.
Ashley from Stoke-on-Trent says... is it Alexander the Great?
It's not. We're narrowing it down a little bit, aren't we?
James from Chesterfield is on the phone, which is kind of a clue as to, you know, this might conceivably be the right answer. Hello, James.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
And the answer is?
The Doors.
And the character?
Jim Morrison.
That'll be the one, I would have thought.
Correct. It was going to be John Travolta. I think he might have even met up with former members of the Doors or learnt the lyrics or something. It was pretty close to being him. Of course, it went to Val Kilmer, who we love. Massively, but was really good as Jim Morrison.
It was almost an impression, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I thought it was one of Val Kilmer's best performances, actually. Fantastic performance.
Of which, how many would you say? Val Kilmer performances?
He's in a new film called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is out in a few weeks' time, and he's very good in it. So Val's on his way back, everybody.
James, give me a great Val Kilmer performance, apart from In the Doors. Okay, that's it. That's fine. That's the right answer. We'll double your presents. James, well done. You've won a bag of entertaining things for the weekend. A whole bunch of stuff, as Mark would say. What else have we got, Mark? James?
This close.
Week's bloke.
Let's talk about Thumbsucker. This is a quirky teen angst movie about this guy, 17-year-old guy called Justin, played by Lou Pucci, who, as the title would suggest, still sucks his thumb, even though he's 17 years old. And he lives in this sort of hippie, new-age family. Tilda Swinton and Vincent D'Onofrio plays parents. And, yeah, they like to be called by their first names. And they're all a bit crazy and a bit loopy. And his mum is obsessed with this guy on TV who she dreams of meeting. So it's clearly a bit of a mixed-up household that he comes from. And then he falls in love with this girl called Rebecca. And, of course, he thinks, well, you know, I'm 17, I'm still sucking my thumb. I can't really attract a girl like that. So he goes to... He actually goes to an orthodontist to try and solve his problem. The orthodontist, amusingly, is played by Keanu Reeves. It's actually really funny in this. And he tries all these different methods of trying to stop him sucking his thumb, and he puts him on drugs and trying to harness his kind of inner peace to stop him having these hang-ups and stop him having these little habits. Goes on all these different trials to actually be a normal, well-adjusted teenager like everyone else. None of them really work. This is Thumbsucker.
Nervous?
Something.
Completely understandable. This isn't a classroom situation. And that's a whole other new thing for you to process. I wish I was bald. Bitch.
Your hair seems fine.
Okay, now you're making it worse.
I'm sorry.
Did you see the girls out there?
Yeah, I saw Renee in the hall.
Okay, go round them up. Bring them in here.
The men's room.
That's okay. I'm a teacher. It's completely understandable to have some butterflies right now. So what I want to do is go back to the basics. Let's remember our posturing. Breathing. Renee, I really want you to use your eye contact today. Let me emphasize your eyes. I got some mascara. Who's the windows? Let's do some impromptus. Maintenance.
It is important in any system to ensure that all pieces, particularly the most important pieces, are working properly and properly maintained. However,
stop on a dime? Well, it's not debatable.
Are debating.
Line them up.
Knock them down!
You guys are going to do great.
That's Vince Vaughn, actually. He plays the debating teacher at the school that Justin goes to. Quite a low-key performance from Vince Vaughn, because normally he's very big and going for the big, cheap laughs, but it's a nice performance. It's a very art-house movie. It's a very quirky movie. Actually quite gentle. I think that's the real novelty of it. It's not horrible. It's actually a really sweet film. Lou Pucci is this guy, the thumbsucker of the title, is fantastic. Keanu Reeves, as I said, playing an orthodontist. I mean, Keanu Reeves is sending himself up, and that's always good to see. Vince Vaughn I liked in it. It is far too offbeat to be massive, but its heart is in the right place, and I think that is the key with Thumbsucker. And it's just about accepting your quirks. Don't try and actually just make everyone the same. Enjoy your idiosyncrasies. I think that's the message of the movie.
How do you define art house?
I think, well, no, like gothic.
Yeah, and if there, has there been an art house gothic picture?
Absolutely, I'm sure there's been plenty.
But art house, does it, because it, you always tend to assume that it means small audiences, yeah. Very kind of European coffee drinker type film.
And I think, you know, there's a business argument saying actually it's about independent movies and the budget of the film is a lot to do with it being an art house film. It's not made by a big studio. But actually, I think a lot of it is attitude as well. The attitude of a movie, if it is offbeat, if it is quirky, if it is dark, if it's not looking for big mainstream thrills, it can be defined as art house as well. And actually, art house movies can turn out to be big hits. Lost in Translation, I would say, is an art house movie, but it did break through and become a big money earner as well. So it's sort of industrial, but it's also about the attitude of the film as well.
Also, by loosening the ties between style and narrative concern, it allows for increased subjective realism and authorial expressivity.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, I'd agree with you on that.
Rob Alford says, Val Kilmer, great performances. Iceman in Top Gun. You're meant to hate him, and you do. Richard Anderson, now I actually do agree with this. Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday in Tombstone.
Yeah, that's true.
So Simon, you complimented him on his performance when he was in on your show a few months ago. You're so two-faced. Now, actually, I've just forgotten it. But yeah. Actually, his accent in that film, which he described, it's an obscure southern aristocratic accent, which he managed to find, was genuinely good. I'm not just two-faced, I just haven't got a good memory.
Richard. We were being churlish. When he tries hard, when he makes an effort, I think Val Kilmer can be really good. I think, actually, what we're saying more is that he's not the most exciting person to interview, is he?
That's probably it, which is, of course, the unforgivable sin, as yeah. far as we're concerned. And he was great in Heat, down in Derbyshire. It was a great movie.
Yes, certainly. I think we've been corrected, Simon.
I think so, not for the first time. What else is out?
Let's talk about
bloke.
Saw 2. The first one, which you've never seen, I actually loved. I thought it was brilliant. Two blokes wake up in chains in this disused warehouse toilet, this dead man lying between them. What the hell's going on? Simple premise. Cary Elwes was in it. He's not actually a fantastic actor, but has been in some good films like Princess Bride and always goes for it. He always puts 110% into it. And in Saw 1, gave this really sweaty, sleazy performance, and I really liked him in that. So that was Saw 1. This one tries to up the ante a little bit. So the killer from that first movie is back. He's called Jigsaw. But now he's not just trapped two people in his lair. He's got, like, several people there, 6 or 7 people. And they're not just in the toilet now, chained up. They're trapped in this entire house, and they only have a few hours to escape. Otherwise, they will die. This is Saw 2.
What is this?
Everything you need to know is on this.
Greetings and welcome. I trust that you are all wondering where you are. I can assure you that while your location is not important, what these walls offer for you is important. Salvation, if you earn it. 3 hours from now, the door to this house will open. Unfortunately, you only have 2 hours to live.
That's Saw 2. Because it's bigger...
That's the voice of Jigsaw, is it?
That is, yeah, yeah. Well, obviously it's been changed a little bit, but Tobin Bell is the actor. He was in the first one, he's in this, he plays Jigsaw. He's actually really good, really scary. But because the whole movie is bigger, because it has more characters, it has more locations, it loses some of the simplicity of the first one, I think. That was such a simple idea and really well executed. So like most sequels, like the Zorro movie, in fact, it does feel more forced. There are twists, like in the first one. To be honest, though, I guess them. Now, if I guess them, that's scary, because I'm rubbish at guessing twists in movies. Sixth Sense, nothing. Hadn't got a clue. The Others, no idea. The Village, you know, all the big twist movies of recent years, I never get it. In Saw 2, I guess them. So I'm thinking lots of other people will. Lots more characters, but, yeah, pretty bland, really. No one that exciting. Tension is really watered down by the larger scale of the movie. On the plus side, as I said, Tobin Bell as Jigsaw, he's back. He's brilliant, he's eerie, he has that real calm about him. He's not OTT at all. I think calm killers in movies are much more scary. And some of the horror moments, essentially, I mean, what people want to see are the blood and the guts in the film, if you're a horror film fan. And there are some genuinely terrifying bits. The opening scene, a knife and an empty eye socket. I don't want to see that. I could barely watch it. It was horrible, but that's the point of it. Syringes, OK? If you have a phobia of needles, There's a bit in this you won't want to see because it's really, really horrible. So the horror moments are there, but it's just the other stuff, like the characters, the dialogue,
the script. I think I'd rather see Zorro at the moment.
That's not as good as the first one. So watch it for the horror bits, but just don't expect to be as impressed as you were with Saw 1.
You said you can't watch it for the horror bits, or bits you can look at.
Well, yeah, I know, but that's the point, isn't it? You go there to cover your face, to barely look at it, that's so scary, and that's the enjoyment of it. That's the warped world of being a horror fan.
On the subject of Val Kilmer, Nick in London says, I randomly went to see Spartan last year in Singapore and thought that Val Kilmer was actually very good in it. Don't get me wrong, the Val Kilmer Saint is terrible and Wonderland was good except for Val Kilmer, but I thought he did understate it quite well for Spartan. The film seems to have made practically no impact over here, though.
Yeah, virtually, it barely came out, actually.
Is there anything else? We can mop it up with Val Kilmer correspondence.
Yeah, go on then, because, I mean, this is Battle in Heaven, which is this Spanish movie, which...
No, tell us.
Oh, it's a Spanish language... It's not actually Spanish, it's set in Mexico, but Spanish language.
Isabella Scolaropero.
She's not in it, no. This actually stars a Mexican guy who looks a bit like a Mexican Ricky Tomlinson, which really put me off the whole way through, because it's actually a very heavy-going movie about this chauffeur who falls in love with the daughter of his boss. His boss is an army general, so he falls in love with his teenage daughter, at the same time as going through this spiritual crisis and having a relationship crisis, and his wife has kidnapped this baby and his life is completely crumbling. And I think the main deal about it, I'll put on my Kermode hat now, is that it's got an 18 certificate and it's been rated 18 because of, I think, quote, real strong sex. And the sex scenes in this, the opening scene is this guy, this Mexican guy who looks like Ricky Tomlinson, being pleasured by this Mexican teenage girl, and you know it's real. You see everything, you know that it's all there, and I think this is why it's caused a bit of controversy, because of the sex scenes. Actually, it's pretending to be about religion, it's pretending to be about a man going through a spiritual crisis, pretending to be about politics, lots of different things. But you know what I think it's about? It's about an old ugly bloke fancying a fit hot babe. And that's been done many times before. Geoffrey Chaucer was doing that hundreds of years ago. So it's trying to be clever and intelligent. It's not. It's just about sex. That's what it is. It's a film about sex, and the sex is in there. For real.
That sounds very, very horrible.
It's a very hard movie to watch.
Again,
it's a very hard movie to watch. It's called Battle in Heaven. And what really annoys me about films like that is when they are pretending to be about something else. And, yeah, OK, there are elements of other things in this movie, about religion, whatever. But essentially, it is just about an old bloke fancying a good-looking woman. What's clever about that?
Rick in Hampshire, Val Kilmer was not very bad in Heat by Michael Mann. Anyway, so our movie of the week, James?
Thumbsucker.
With Keanu Reeves.
That's it. Well, he's not in it that much, but it's a good movie. Thumbsucker.
James, thanks very much indeed. All the reviews available again. Just go to the website bbc.co.uk/5live, following the instructions from there. Have a fantastic weekend. Back on Monday, Drive comes next on AM, on digital and online. You're listening to 5 Live.
Live news, live sport.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.